Welcome, listeners, to this week's podcast. There is only one place to start. The place that nearly gave Stan a massive triple bypass yesterday. Manchester United were 3-0 up. Coventry City somehow got it back to 3-0. They had a goal ruled out right at the end of extra time for an offside to make it 4-3. And then they eventually lost on penalties to Man United. And a valiant performance from Coventry. And Manchester United do set up an all-Manchester final in the FA Cup. And Stan, is Erik ten Hag gone, even though they won this game?
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe if you asked me that a month ago, I'd have been 55-45, but he stays. I think a lot of that is maybe a little bit of credit from last season and the lack of names to replace him. But I think the last month, look at some of the shots we've faced, and he's changed nothing. And you look at some of the results too. I mean, especially Brentford, we've dropped 2 points in the last few minutes. Chelsea, we lost the game from 3-2 up in the 96th minute. We went 1-0 down and 2-1 down against Bournemouth. We had a decent result against Liverpool in the midst of that. But again, they had 30 shots. And if they decided to, they could have won that game 4-5-1 if they were clinical enough. And again, against Coventry, look, we go 3-0 up about an hour in, 65 minutes in. That should be absolutely coasting. You get your fourth goal, or if not, you keep the ball tight for 10-15 minutes. And 80th minute, when it's 3-0, you sub maybe an 18-year-old for a bit of a debut up front and, you know, see the game out. But it wasn't that at all. I mean, Coventry started with about five. I don't really know why, because it played into our hands. I mean, like I've said before, if you square up to United this season, and especially in the last month where it seems to have got worse, you will get opportunities against us, and they only squared up against us in the second half when they were 2-0 down. They had a chance at 2-0 just before Bruno made it 3, who I think was, I mean, Patrick, maybe him and Maguire were the only players that could hold the Reds up after full time. United made it 3-0. Like I say, that should have been game over. It wasn't. Pretty much a simple change from Mark Robbins taking a defender off and asking United a few questions by sticking a number 10 on instead. Saw us capitulate. Sim scored a goal. A little bit lucky come off his chin, but, you know, he had acres of space in the middle of the penalty area. So, bore again by, you know, makeshift United defence. 3-2 was a crazy deflection, but again, he was given time and allowed to shoot. So, despite the deflection being lucky, it comes from a situation that United have seen far too many times this season, a guy being able to shoot. And if you shoot, you run the risk of a deflection, you run the risk of your keeper buddy falling over, you run the risk of it being a screamer. You know, if you allow somebody to shoot, they've got a chance of scoring a goal. Simple maths, simple equation, fam. But yeah, it's just rubbish. I mean, you were saying before about a triple bypass. I think the only thing that would cause that would be the German doner kebab and donuts I had on a Friday night, because it was completely, I was completely apathetic about the whole thing. I honestly didn't feel too much. I was happy, obviously, every time we scored, but as soon as it was 3-3, I was like, I mean, it's been the last few weeks, it's been difficult watching United, should we say. But every passing game, I kind of go 5% closer to being Ten Hag out, and I'm pretty much all the way there as to yesterday. I don't think I've ever known United to get to a final and me feel disappointed after the game, but they surprise you in every single way, especially this season. And yeah, no, in short, I don't think Ten Hag will be there. I think it's a perfect moment. I think it's gone too far in terms of not just tactically, with the fact that he's just completely ignored the shots and the gaping holes in our midfield and in front of our back line, but just in terms of now, I think that even the most ardent Ten Hag fan, if he had many left by this game, will have been lost after this one, despite us obviously winning the penalty shootout. I think it's a perfect chance, despite maybe a lack of replacements for Ten Hag and Ineos, to, you know, handshake, you've not been sacked, we'll put it as a mutual termination, a little bit of a payout rather than the maximum. You know, thank you for the Carabao Cup and a few trips to Wembley. Maybe an FA Cup if City pissed the night before. And you know, we move on and we go with somebody else next season. A fresh start on Ineos, a fresh start with a new manager. I think it's too far gone now.
Yeah, and gradually over the course of doing the pods with you, I remember at one point, I want to say maybe it was about 6 to 8 weeks ago, you were quite indifferent and you was like, I'm not asked either way if he stays or goes. And like you said there, you've gradually gone 5% closer, near enough every other week to becoming Ten Hag out. And I completely understand why. And I was with my cousin watching the game, and when you were 3-0 up, I just said, oh, I'm going to go, mate. Like I'm going to go. Like, it's boring. This, like, it's game over. And I went, oh, you lose 4-3. Like, it was like the last thing I said to him was like, we were just like leaving. And then next minute, I get a notification, 3-1, 3-2, 3-3. I'm like, no way is it 3-3. And then I pull it up on iPlayer, see the goal. I'm like, oh my God, what is happening here? But yeah, just a crazy set of circumstances. Coventry City, the magic of the cup, got them to the semi-final. They were the width of an ant stick from going back to Wembley and setting up an all-sky blue final against Man City. And with Coventry, was it more United literally threw the game away as opposed to Coventry were coming on?
I think you'd have to say, yeah. I think if you 3-0 up after 60, 70 minutes, I don't think you can suddenly say that Coventry deserved to win the game and they were hard done by. I think it was arrogance by United, which is crazy considering the experience on the pitch and the experience that even Ten Hag has in terms of league titles, cup wins, Champions League semi-final, Champions League runs, Europa League final, which United, Jose United beat him in. So he's been there before and he's done it before, winning and losing. I just thought it was complete arrogance by United. And maybe the first time I've thought that the players don't believe in what Ten Hag is, because the capitulation was so bad. And trust me, look, we were, like I said before, we were 3-2 up against Chelsea with 3 minutes left, and it felt like this one was worse somehow. We capitulated against a mid-table championship side. And if I'm being completely honest, it didn't surprise me too much, which is crazy to say that you're 3-0 up with half an hour left. I mean, we were 2-0 up at half time, and I tweeted, I'd love this to be 4-0, but 2-2 is a lot more likely. And we went 3-0 up, and 3-3 happened, and I wasn't too surprised. And I think if Coventry made it 4-3, then United would have only had themselves to blame. Obviously, you let somebody come back in, and it's not like it's another, they're not even another Prem team, they're not even fighting relegation in the Prem. They're trying to get into the playoff positions in the league below you. United invited them on like they do to every single person. All it took was one defender coming off and an attacking midfielder coming on. And for half an hour of the second half, United were at sixes and sevens, and we conceded 3 in half an hour. Which again, honestly, I think if Coventry started how they set up in the second half, it's probably even more likely that United didn't go through, because I think if they just took advantage of the walls in front of our defence and behind our defensive midfielder that have been there since the Wolves game, the first game of the season, we could have got so much more joy. I think they paid us too much respect, and they got the tactics wrong, quite frankly, in the first 60 minutes. I can't say did them, because they ended up taking it to extra time, but they would have been in a lot better position if they actually squared up to us and threw a few punches, because United are so weak. So yeah, brilliant. I thought it was brilliant by Coventry. To come back and do what they did against Wolves was brilliant. A trip to Wembley, and even though they didn't go through, the stories about Coventry and the plaudits go to Coventry, and the story for their fans to be there and at least take it to extra time and think you've won it, is something that I'm sure they'll remember anyway. Okay then, so we'll go to the other semi-final, played on Saturday afternoon between Chelsea and City. And City came out victorious with a 1-0 win, taking them to the final. It was Bernardo Silva who scored, Jim. So we'll come to you first, as you are victorious, glorious as well, potentially. Jim, talk us through this one. How do you think about City's overall performance, and were they deserved semi-final winners?
Yeah, thanks for that Bobby Roode entrance there, WWE icon. I mean, it wasn't the greatest City performance. They looked like a team that had just gone 120 minutes and lost in penalties in Champions League to Real Madrid, which is what they'd, of course, done since we'd last recorded. Heartbreaker, yeah, he had the penalties knocking us out of the Champions League, so we couldn't retain that one. But in terms of retaining the FA Cup, so you're back into an FA Cup final, and you had to wait, 151 years or something for an all-Manchester final, and now two have come in 2 years. It's funny how things work. I didn't think City were great. I didn't think they were the better team. I don't even think the most avid City fan can say that, but it's what great teams do, ultimately. They ride the luck a little bit, and they didn't have many chances, and they took one. And it's quite unlike City, to be fair. They've lost many a game where they've been on the other side of that, where they've knocked at the door all game, and then that one chance in the box has gone the way of the other team, and this happened for City. Doku came on for Grealish, and it was very much like on Wednesday night against Real Madrid, where Grealish had kind of worn down Carvajal. He'd done the same to Malo Gusto here, and then Doku had came on some fresh legs, and he's such a perfect sub for it, because him and Grealish are both great, but they're so different. Doku doesn't even think twice about taking a man on, and Grealish is a bit more patient. So Doku came on and got the impact against Madrid and got the impact against Chelsea. We got a bit of a lucky and bounce pink Petrovic. If he hadn't have, it was good keeping, but maybe if he hadn't have even got a touch onto it, City wouldn't have been able to get Bernardo Silva at the back post. And then Bernardo Silva's shot was also heavily deflected. So yeah, one of them wins that probably didn't deserve, but a champions kind of do that, don't they? So yeah, full credit to him for even keeping themselves in the game, because Pep Guardiola was very, I can't even think of the word, but he criticised the schedule, and he was very complimentary of his players for even making it. I mean, he was saying how good Walker was after keeping up with Vinicius for 120 minutes, and then how good Rodri was, because he never seems to miss a game. Not in terms of their actually output in the game, but in terms of just being there and keeping legs, because I imagine they didn't even train from Wednesday to Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, summed up really well there, Jim. Not really much else to say. Obviously, we've seen Guardiola upset at the schedule as well after the game. And City will have another game, like he said there. A Manchester derby final, I think it's something like best part of 100 years since there was a back-to-back same finals or something, Blackburn QPR or something. They said after the game. So, like buses, cook, you wait for one, and then two come along at once. But something that won't be two coming along at once, I'll try and link a segue, is cup finals for Chelsea this season. See what I did there? But despite that, Cook, it was a similar story. Not exactly the same, but similar maybe to the Liverpool-Chelsea game, where I would argue that Chelsea had the better chances in terms of volume and quality, both of those. But they lose 1-0. Talk us through your thoughts, Mr. Cook.
My initial thoughts after the game were, I thought we were just outclassed at the end by a team that's just been there and done that, and they're known for poking and prodding until they get something, and they're the best at that. And I'd love to know how many late goals they've scored, because over the course of the season, I bet it is a lot for City. And I'm just proud of this Chelsea team. That was my initial thoughts, that I'm proud. I think that we took a step up from the Carabao Cup final to the FA Cup semi-final in terms of, I think Pochettino got his game plan absolutely perfect. I think we absorbed and countered, and that just shows from the actual quality of chance we created. And if Nicholas Jackson puts one of his chances away, let alone all three, then we're in a final. And I just think that people that are on this bandwagon of, oh, Pochettino, oh my God, I can't believe it. I don't know what more Poch could do, genuinely, for that to happen. Because, like I said, I think the game plan was excellent. I thought it worked to a T, and we just needed to take one of those chances. And unfortunately, we got punished by the best team in world football at the minute. And that will happen if you don't take your chances against anyone in the Premier League, let alone, like I just said, the best team in world football. But yeah, I'm proud of this team. I think that to get to two finals would have been incredible. But to beat this side, even if they had gone 120 minutes with Real Madrid midweek, would have been huge for us. And I think genuinely with a full squad, we do beat them, just because of the wear and tear on City and, again, the schedule.
I was going to ask, it sounds a bit daft to say this, but do you think, missed opportunity might be harsh, but that's the only thing I can think of, in terms of, it's one of those situations where the semi-final is probably harder than, well, definitely harder than either opponent you're going to face in the final. City were a little bit wounded after the Madrid result, and you could see that, whether that was tiredness or maybe a bit of a knock on you know, mentally. I thought it's very rare that a team makes that many quality chances against City. I mean, coming out of it, you think, missed opportunity, that's the only phrase I can think of, which feels a bit harsh when you lose 1-0 to City in a semi. It can happen to anybody, but you know, with watching the game and knowing the context, and knowing who you're up against in the final. You know, you've beaten United this season already, got one win each, and obviously it could have been Coventry too with you playing beforehand. Is it a bit of a missed opportunity to reach two finals in one season?
I'd say if you're being extra critical, I would say yeah, just because I think you've got to put into context that we are the youngest side in the league, in the Premier League, in the best league in the world. We are the youngest side, and we're with the width of an ant stick from going to two very good finals for us anyway. In Europe's top five leagues, we're the second youngest team. I can't remember who we're second to, but I think if I am being hypercritical, it is a missed opportunity given that we played Klopp's kids for half an hour in extra time and just looked like we kind of dropped back naturally. Whereas in this game, like I said, I think we did take a step up because we went toe-to-toe with City and we followed the game plan perfectly. And Pochettino, like I said, can do more than put the ball in the net himself because, like I said, the quality of chance we created against the best side in the world was ridiculous. So, again, hypercritical, missed opportunity. But if I've got my cynical, realistic hat on, for the youngest side in the league to get to the FA Cup semi-final and lose to the best team in the world and get to the Carabao Cup final and lose against Klopp's Liverpool and potentially finishing the Europa League. Still, good season for us, that.
Yeah, I would agree, to be fair. Cup can go either way, as the saying goes. The magic of the Cup. Two highest-spending teams in the world meet each other in the final. Jim, another cliche question I'll come to you with. Did Chelsea lose this or did City win it?
Ooh, a bit of both. I thought City did well to keep them in it, and they won it in terms of it was very took the chances very well, very clinical, but also just keeping in the game was very important. But yeah, I think Chelsea probably had a huge opportunity. Coach kind of mentioned it there, and I do agree. I think it's a little bit of a missed opportunity, but you can't be too harsh on them because the opportunities that they missed have come against Klopp's Liverpool, and that was it was weird circumstances with the kids playing so well for half an hour, and then coming up against this City team who the record at Wembley now, I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but other than Community Shield games where you get not even the full squad back because City have such a, they give them such a big break, it's pretty incredible. We rarely lose there, so yeah, you can't be too harsh on them, but yeah, a little bit of both. I would just wonder, and I know you said Cook, that Pochettino can't do much more wrong, and I thought his tactics were pretty good. Obviously, you created a lot of chances, and Nicholas Jackson was poor in this game, and he probably should have given Chelsea an early lead. And I think if City were chasing a goal, it's especially with Haaland not even on the bench, and it was our option. And Odoku came on and good, was brilliant, but we took off Alvarez for Bob. We didn't really have anyone else on there attacking-wise to kind of ask questions of Chelsea. And obviously, like I said, we looked a bit tired. I wonder on Pochettino's half. I know there's this like kind of he doesn't win anything narrative around him. I know he won something in PSG, but I mean I think those three could do that together. And he in fact lost a league title, didn't he? That we've said before on the podcast. It's another stain on his record, I would say, a little bit, just in terms of he has failed to get off the line multiple times. And he has had two really good opportunities this season. Very unlucky not to win the Carabao Cup, but at the same time, he probably should have won that one. And again today, he probably should be in an FA Cup final against what we've already spoke about, a very vulnerable United. So, yeah, a little bit of a stain on his record, I would say.
Right, listeners, that music can only mean one thing. It is, of course, the bet of the week. Half 12s are back this week. You've got a nice one. It is West Ham versus Liverpool, but of course, we don't bet on the early kickoffs. So, starting the bet of the week, first in the fourfold, we've got Fulham versus Crystal Palace. We're going to go both teams to score. No draw at Craven Cottage in that one. Then Manchester United host Burnley. I'm going to go for both teams to score result, Manchester United. Then we're heading to the northeast, Newcastle versus Sheffield United. I'm going to go Newcastle United to start, -1 handicap in this one. And then last but not least, Wolves versus Luton. I'm going to go Wolves, just match result. And Stan, what can listeners do with that?
They can shove it up the rackers. Well, Welcome back. We're going to have a little game segment for you. And of course, it is football, friends. And if you don't know, then I'm not explaining it to you. You're not a real cookie monster. So we'll go straight into it. Player number one, Stephen Pienaar in 2002. Ivica Olic, Samir Nasri, Adil Rami, Robbie Keane, and he played for four more clubs and retired. So I'll go over them again, just whilst we're typing them out. Stephen Pienaar, 2002, Ivica Olic, Samir Nasri, Adil Rami, Robbie Keane, four more clubs, and then retired.
I'm thinking Samir Nasri. Can't be. When was he at Arsenal? I did eat too far. He had played for a fair amount of clubs, but after City. And I'm wondering if this is like Arsenal City. Was he at West Ham? Sevilla? He went like elsewhere, didn't he? Did he go on Marseille?
I believe Arsenal bought him from Marseille.
If so, I feel like it's Pienaar 2002. And he's been for a few clubs, and there's another player in between. It's probably not before Arsenal, at least. Yeah.
I'm thinking Pienaar's Ajax, or I think he played for Kaiser Chiefs maybe before that.
Nice. It is Ajax, I'll give you that one.
It was after Pienaar, sorry. Dead quick.
Olic.
Yeah. And then after Olic, it was Nasri.
Yeah, and then Adil Rami and Robbie Keane.
Right. So Olic, Jim. Bayern is the obvious.
Yeah.
Nasri. For now, through the obvious two are Man City and Arsenal. Adil Rami, I'd say probably the obvious ones for him is probably Sevilla or Marseille. And then Robbie Keane, I know he played for a lot of clubs, but probably obviously Spurs.
I'm thinking he played for City, you know, Cook.
Arsenal and City have traded a lot between them as well, so there are a lot of similar teammates.
Could be West Ham.
It could be quick. That is true. It could be West Ham. You forget he was there. Is no.
Come on, so you thinking it might help, Jim?
I was gonna say Van Bronckhorst.
It's not Van Bronckhorst. No, too late. 2002 to start, but he did start at Ajax. So do you want to use one of your lifelines?
I think we should, Jim.
All right, I'm going to say it's Nasri, Arsenal, or City.
It's City.
I knew I had a feeling it's going to be City, right? Players who started at Ajax and then came to City.
Did Dutch players who played at City.
Did De Jong start at Ajax?
Did.
Did De Jong?
Did Nigel De Jong. Yes, correct. So, nice. Stephen Pienaar at Ajax, 2003. Ivica Olic at Hamburg. What? Samir Nasri at City. Adil Rami at AC Milan. Robbie Keane at LA Galaxy. And then four more clubs and he retired.
Yeah, you know, should have got one quicker. Do you know when you get one thing and you can't get it out? I was thinking people who started at Ajax, who went to City, and the only person I could think of was Musampa. And he weren't in.
Yeah. And we'll go straight into play number two. Another great fullback, Andy Sagnol, in 1997. Don't forget to write this down. It's a lot easier if you write it down, guys. Book Andrew Mann, listeners. Willy Sagnol, 1997. Antonio Conte. Silvino. Lilian Thuram. Rafael Marquez. And then he retired. A couple of loans in there, but we'll ignore them for the five permanent clubs, though.
He
must have played for Barca, this lad. I'm going to say Cook.
Maybe
surely.
Barca. Or has he not? Are they all red herring?
Surely he's played for Barca. He might be French.
Is this Ludovic Juli?
No. Great name. Oh. It's not Juli.
Oh, French Barcelona player as well. Right, Stan, me and Jimmy are using the lifeline and making a decision for both of us, just like any toxic relationship. We're doing Turan 50-50. Was it Juventus or Barcelona where he played with this chap?
It is Barcelona.
Right, Jim, that was clever. Is it Henri?
It is Thierry Henry. It is. Willy Sagnol at Monaco, Conte at Juventus, Silvino at Arsenal, Lilian Thuram at Barca, and Rafa Marquez at New York Red Bulls before he retired.
It's very obvious. Very obvious when you say it, isn't it?
It is. It is. And that's it. That's the problem with this game. You can go over the field or you can overthink it. But we'll go straight in to player number three. And this is a name you might not know of, but if you played PES or you watched some Euros from 20 years ago, I know my friend Jay LaRonnie will know of this guy. And Tins, if you're listening. Ebbe Sand in 1995. I was a striker for a certain country, and if your Nordies Euro striker knowledge is good. Ebbe Sand, 1995. Then this guy played for two more clubs. And I'll give you the next four, and then that makes up his first club, and then the four following main clubs after that. Jamie Redknapp. David Bentley. Carlos Cuellar. And Scotty Parker. He retired. Some great names there. Great names.
I don't know about you, Jim, but I don't know Ebbe Sand.
No, but we can kind of guess his nation, I reckon, between us.
Well, Stan said Euro, remember? So
yeah,
we'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's Scandi. Sounds Scandi to me, Cook. Could be Eastern European.
What I will say is Scandi. You are correct. But the player is not.
Ebbe Sand, a Scandinavian. Two more clubs. Jamie Redknapp. Spurs or Liverpool, that one. Bentley. Blackburn or Spurs. Carlos Cuellar. I think he played for Aston Villa. And then Parker could be any London club and Newcastle. Who played with Redknapp at Spurs or Liverpool that also played with Bentley at Spurs or Blackburn?
Was he only at Spurs and Blackburn? Bentley, yeah. Went anywhere else.
Spurs at Norwich too, but...
Yeah, he retired early, remember.
Yeah, you think he was like 29, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You got your lifelines, don't forget. We're all on this one, it's the last player.
All right. Going to use the first lifeline, and I'm going to say... Was David Bentley at Blackburn Rovers or Tottenham Hotspur?
He was at Blackburn.
Okay, I think that was a boss move, a la mera move. That helps us a lot, that Blackburn. So Blackburn, but played with Redknapp at either Spurs or Liverpool, Jim. And then Scott Parker, I reckon we stay away from him just because of the sheer volume of clubs.
Well, you could change him.
We could, Jim, but I think there's something in this Carlos Cuellar thing because predominantly we know him for Aston Villa. So Blackburn, Aston Villa with a hint of Spurs or Liverpool.
Yep.
This is... No.
Who are you thinking?
Is this Brad Friedel?
It is Brad Friedel.
Wow. Did he go up in the Spurs, didn't he?
He did. Started off in Brondby.
Yeah, it's like I had a weird flashback of Brad Friedel, very young. Well, not very young, but youngish.
Yeah.
And then you see him kind of as an old man at Aston Villa in the, was it around the Martin O'Neill era?
Yeah, I think so, around that time. So it was Bromby with Sand, two clubs, Liverpool with Redknapp. Then it was Blackburn with David Bentley, Villa with Cuellar, and of course Spurs with Scotty Parker. Brad Friedel, the American in Scandinavia. Great guy. I think he only retired at about 42, didn't he? He was very old anyway.
Yeah, they last long then. Baldy's not keepers.
Well, maybe not. I want one. Hello, welcome back. I'm just going to calm it down now. Looks like Nottingham Forest need to do. Their admin needs to calm down on Twitter. We had a great tweet on Sunday afternoon following the 2-0 loss to Everton at Goodison. It goes like this. Three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept.
We warned the PVMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. Nottingham Forest FC will consider its options. So big words there, essentially calling into question the integrity of the match officials, should we say, and the decision to not give Nottingham Forest three penalties in this relegation 6 points. So it leaves Everton, I believe, 3 or 4 points ahead of Forest with a game in hand. So it puts Forest right down there with the bottom three, and Everton giving themselves a little bit of breathing space. I mean, there's been some reaction to it. Gary Neville's called, basically said it was an embarrassment, has called for Mark Clattenburg, who is the league's only referee, consultant, advisor for any Premier League club, which seems to be going well if you have to do tweets like this. So Young's come out, he was the culprit for all three, which is brilliant, tweeting throwback tunes today, and it was Cry Me a River by Justin Timberlake. So a little bit of a wind up there by Ashley Young, who somehow is still starting and playing 90 minutes for a Premier League club. What else have we had? Oh, we've had the PGMOL come out, Cook, and say that they didn't ask us to change our VAR. And Clattenburg come out and not resign like Gary Neville suggested, but double down and say it was just basically a bizarre situation and it shouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened if he was head of the referees, which is a dig at Mr. Howard Webb too, which I'm sure Fergie won't be happy about and might ping him a tenner just to soften the blow. Cook, what do you think about all this? Do you agree with Gary Neville? Is it an embarrassment by Forest, or... heard by a couple of people now that the Premier League and the officials need to be called out for these types of decisions and these types of moments. Which side of the fence do you sit on?
I sit on the side of the fence where there is absolutely no point in complaining and saying, like, it's such an empty threat. Let me just start here. It's such an empty threat from Forest. We'll consider our options. What are you going to do? Leave the league? What are you going to do? Sue the Prem for a couple of million? Like, you're not getting, what in the long term is that going to achieve other than just pissing the people off that are in charge? It probably annoys them already. They've got an ex-ref on the board who's like advising them on stuff that's going on the pitch. And overall, it just doesn't make Forest likeable as a team. I thought the same when Arsenal put out a statement and when Arteta put one out. I thought that was just absolutely pathetic. I think there's time and places to get your points across, and the managers meet at the start of the season. I'm not saying it's enough, because it's not, but there's a time and a place, and all it looks like from me as a neutral, from them losing 2-0 on the road, is we've lost and we're not happy about it, and we're going to cry about it, even though we're not going to get the result changed. There is no upside for Nottingham Forest doing this. There's absolutely no upside. I don't know if you agree with me there, Stan.
Yeah, I do, and I mean, we've seen a few clubs do it. Like you say, Arsenal did it, Liverpool have done it. I think Wolves did it after Onana committed DBH on the striker in the first game of the season. And nothing came of it. Wolves have had shocking decisions. They didn't replay the game like Liverpool wanted, and I don't think Arsenal got an apology. For what Forest are expecting now, I don't know. It would worry me as a Forest fan that they seem to have lost their heads a little bit. And, you know, they're not relegated. We've seen teams recover from this. It's not like Everton have gone 10 points clear of them. It's, you know, with Everton's form, if Forest win 2 games out of the last 5, they could stay up. I mean, they're staying up right now. It's not like they're sat in the bottom three. They're not in the bottom three. Jim, where do you sit with this one? Is it a bit of head loss from Forest, or do they have reason to question it? Maybe they think if we raise this now, it might give us our best chance over the last 5 games rather than if we don't say anything.
I do wonder if that's why they've done it. Liverpool got a few favourable decisions, didn't they, after they wanted that game and played against Spurs. It kind of worked out for them. I think the tweet reads like it's a fan account who's forgot he's logged into the social media one. It's pretty embarrassing. I am of the opinion that refereeing in this country is just shocking. And there's no good one. It's every week, and the inconsistencies are just all over. Inconsistently inconsistent, you could say. So I do think they actually do need to be called out, and I think, but not by a Twitter account, not just because you've lost a game. And I think the way they've done it, and this is what a lot of football fans do, and it's really annoying, because refs do need calling out, but they all act like some conspiracy against their team. It's always, oh, this referee doesn't give us anything. It's the classic, isn't it? It's like everyone feels hard done by. It's not the case. The referees are just shit. Like, they make loads of mistakes, and they shouldn't, because they've got this, the amount of technology that they've been pumped into it, it should be a lot better. But I just think the angle coming at it from, oh, it's a Luton fan, so that's why he's done it. I mean, you hear it every week, don't you? I mean, just like, oh, yeah, look at him, he's refereeing a City or United game, and it's from Altrincham, and it's like, come on, let's be real. I mean, it happens all over football, they're going to support somebody, aren't they? But the professionals at the end of the day, I mean, look at the players, like, Carragher's a fucking Everton fan, and he goes and beats Liverpool, one of the heroes. I mean, he's changed, don't you, because they're in that profession. And I think the layer is interesting that they have Klein Bergler. I think that's an extra layer that makes it even more interesting. The fact that this has happened from a club that has a referee who was literally in the league, what, 2 years ago, what, a year ago, and he's the one calling them out. So that is quite interesting. So yeah, I kind of sit on both sides of the fence. I just think the way they've done it is wrong, and it is a bit embarrassing. But I do think the referees need to be called out, and I think it needs to happen more by pundits, to be honest. They seem to stick up for them a lot.
Do you think that's because they work with him a lot, Jim?
Yeah, potentially. Because managers doing it, they just get fined, they get nowhere. The club's doing it like that, they look embarrassing. Players doing it, and it looks like, oh, this is what we blamed it on, when really you should just be playing better. Just don't get beat by Everton. And I know that's easy for me to say, but it needs to be done officially, and like writing letters to them and stuff. I know they don't do anything, so I do get where they come from to kind of get this reaction. Because like you mentioned before, Stan, I mean, they write to PGML all the time, don't they? And kind of nothing happens, or they go, oh yeah, that was wrong. And you find out Dermot Gallagher's told you should have got a penalty on Monday. And it's like, well, that'll make anyone feel better. So something does need to change. I just think the way they've done it, it looks like a head loss, yeah. It looks a bit embarrassing to me.
Yeah, and Stan, just as we're finishing on the relegation roundup, what a massive weekend for Everton to obviously get the 3 points as Burnley won. And now it only separates the bottom, I want to say, four of the bottom five is now 7 points with Everton, Forest, Luton, and now Burnley, Stan. Do you think it's as nailed on as Luton and Burnley are going to go, or do you think Forest and Everton can still be dragged into it?
I think they can. I think they're both capable of head loss. I mean, there's still, what, 15, 18 points still to play for, which, you know, none of them, I don't think, are going to get near that maximum total. But, I mean, point deductions, potentially. They seem to come out of nowhere, and they seem to be very arbitrary numbers, minus 4, minus 2, minus 10. Appeal it, it's minus 6. So one of them might come out of nowhere. Like I mentioned before about Forest getting a couple of wins in the last 5, I think, any of those teams put a half-decent run together, they'll be out of there. Not Sheffield United, but I don't know off the top of my head where Burnley are, but it feels like they've actually had a decent last month or so in terms of finally picking up a few points. So they might be in the conversation to get out too. Brentford with a huge win, Everton with a huge win, like you say, and obviously we've seen this head loss from Forest. I think it will stay how it is. I think it will be the 3 relegated teams, which saddens me because I do really like Luton and I've enjoyed them this season. I think they've given everybody a go, even if they've got battered. They've not cowered, they've not played really, they've not been easy to play against. I don't think anybody's gone to Kenilworth Road apart from Brentford, which maybe might not be a good sign for them, but not many teams have gone to Kenilworth Road, especially the Big Six, and come out at that ground thinking, oh, that was an easy 3 points today, which in itself is a good skill to have. So I think for the league, it'd be great for them to be there. With the story too, the size of the ground, the away end and stuff like that, it'd be nice for them to stay up. But I do think it'll be that bottom three. I'm glad Everton stay up too, because they're always great entertainment. And yeah, Brentford are a good side. I like Thomas Frank. So probably the three promoted teams to go down. Sheffield United are definitely done, but yeah, at least it makes it interesting now. A bit of head loss.
Last game of the season, Stan. Burnley at home to Nottingham Forest.
Is it?
There's only 3 points in the match. So I look at Burnley, have got some pretty hard pitches themselves, but if they can find a win, I do agree. I think they've been playing well lately. They've been asking the question a little bit. I mean, who did they draw against last week? And they get Brighton as a freak goal. If they'd have won that game, they'd be 1 point behind Forest now, which they should have won that game. It was a fucking, what, Trappage, was it Murich? Sorry, just missed the ball.
Chelsea with 10 men, so a little
Forest
bit
got four games left. Two of them, they play City and Chelsea. The other one is against Sheffield United, and if you don't take anything from that Sheffield United game, it's at Bramall Lane as well, then that last game of the season could be just the way the, what's the word? The the momentum goes, because if they're losing momentum going into the last game and Burnley are kind of getting on track, it could be a very late survival.
Could be. I've just brought it up then. They've only lost one in the last 8 league games, Burnley. And they've actually got results. They've had 3 red cards, sorry, in that period. They've won one with 10 men, drew one with 10 men, and lost one with 10 men against Everton. And that was that Murich mistake. So, yeah, Jim, I'm genuinely surprised they're having a go this late. But they've finally got someone who... I know that Murich made a massive mistake the other day, but he does look better than Trafford overall as a goalkeeper. And they've added Datro Fana on loan, who's someone that can put the ball in the net. And Lyle Foster even scored in the last game. So everyone's playing well for Burnley at the minute. Everyone's really digging in. So, yeah, it's going to make it very interesting. And hopefully it does go to the last day where that is still a potential, because I remember one season quickly where Wigan were playing Sheffield United on last game of the season, and that was a very interesting game, and Unsworth scored that penalty, if you're a Tick or a Blade, and you'll remember that one.
I do remember that, and I think it would, obviously not for the club, but I think it would be great to have maybe 5 teams that could get relegated in that last weekend, and potentially 3 teams that could win the league on the last weekend. It would just be, you know, great to see. We're not going to be involved in either end cup, which is good and bad, but at least we can watch it unfold.